From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 6th day of May, 2022. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll check in on prevented planting in the state of North Dakota and how soybeans play there, given the numbers we've been hearing both from the Ag Manager folks at Kansas State University and the FarmDoc Daily folks here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the U of I. And then we'll check out the weather forecast, too, with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible, all on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
July corn today settled at $7.84¾ a bushel, down 12¾. December at $7.20¾, 17¾ lower. July beans at $16.22, down 25. November at $14.70¾, down 21. Bean meal futures down $6.30. The bean oil off 95¢. And wheat futures were up 2 for the July at $11.08¹. For the soft red, the hard red at $11.70¹, down 6½. Live cattle futures in Chicago at $132.75, $1.25 lower. Feeders at $174.70 down, rather up 32½¢. And lean hogs were lower, down $2.97¹ at $104.10. Crude oil futures at $109.71 a barrel, up $1.44. And gasoline on the wholesale price, 10¢ higher for the day. Mike Zuzulo of GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas, now joins us to talk about the marketplace as it finished up for the week. Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Nice to be with you, Todd. Happy Friday, and hoping you all out there get some warm, windy, beautiful weather to start your planning properly out there.
It's coming. I'm positive it's coming. Hopefully we'll get things in, and then there'll be another nice soft rain after that. Let's go with that one for the day.
Hey, and then it'll rain dollar bills after that.
Yeah, well, maybe before that too. Commodity Week. Yeah, thank you for being on Commodity Week yesterday. It was a pretty good show, I thought.
Yeah, I think it was a timely show. You know, the market, I think, realized this week that we do have some softening demand. And I always feel, I love to be on with everybody, but I really enjoy Greg and Ellen and their cash understanding of the markets. And also, they deal with a wide plethora of people as well. And just felt like it was a really nice show from a standpoint of trying to understand the cash market versus the future psychology and the softening global demand, the softening global economy that, you know, is working now into the trade psychology, China's COVID policy lockdown, and, you know, the Fed monetary policy. I think those really worked themselves into the market this past week. So I think for me, it really left the weather, the supply, and the energy markets, the kindling, so to speak, of the inflationary bull, left those things to be needed to keep the prices elevated. And with this clearing of the Corn Belt weather, especially in your part of the country, that really did show up at the end of the week.
Yeah, was today's marketplace about that? Is that what happened? And then, of course, it didn't settle off as much as it was during the day at some point.
Yeah, my sense was is that this was a continuation of Thursday's beginning of feeling that we don't have to worry about bullish crop delays in a week from now, and I mean 10 days from now, not just on Monday morning, but the trade is already looking out past next week's crop report on Thursday to the following Monday, thinking that we're going to get really caught up on corn planting. And I think that's where they probably are getting ahead of themselves a little bit. One of the big exceptions that I thought was important, and this does relate to the report, I think, next week, is the price action for this week did not fit what you and I have talked about for the wheat market. It did not follow the mindset of selling off. It actually gained premium because it actually saw first India's crop get smaller on weather, and then Europe's crop get smaller on weather, France specifically. And then come Friday, we saw the Stats Canada numbers come out, and the wheat stocks were down substantially more than what the trade was expecting. And I want to say down about 50% from where it was a year ago for all wheat stocks. And so I think that really helped the wheat market. And for me, in my analysis, it helped me just hold pat on not making any new hedges until I see the crop number reports next week on Thursday.
Yeah, so those numbers are due out at 11 o'clock. That's the first time on Thursday Central, that is, that USDA will give us numbers for new crop corn and soybeans. I know you'll be watching those. You'll be watching the wheat numbers, though, I take it, too.
Yeah, the supply-demand numbers for wheat, and this is where I still think we're more like a 2008 market, and I talk about that more on Commodity Week than a 2012 market, Todd, and that's because if there's damage done in any crop already, it's going to be the wheat, not the corn at this stage. And I think the USDA would show that first. The other thing that I would say about the report that just came out today that makes it even more important is the Brazilian corn production number, because Safra's Mercado came out, and while they lowered their bean number by almost 3 million tons from their last estimate to 122.3, they kept their corn estimate the same at 118.1. A lot of people, including me, are at 110, 111, and some privates are already down at 107 for a corn production number. So I would say we ratcheted up the importance and elevated the importance of the Brazilian corn number next week, coming out with USDA at 116 in their last report.
Did Safra's Mercado give a reason for keeping it where it was?
Yeah, well, they didn't, but reading in between the lines, looking at the first crop and the second crop, is they did come down on their second crop, but they also bolstered their first crop. So I think they robbed Peter to pay Paul, essentially, to keep the number the same, from what I could tell.
Are we concerned about the livestock side in the United States?
Well, we should be. I mean, this is where you're hurting your demand. We saw that in the meat numbers, and Ellen and Greg and I go through that on Commodity Week as well. This is going to be good for the summer grilling season, though, and we're not going to shatter demand, because in my opinion, you can't take both high gas prices and high meat prices. The high meat prices will lose that battle. The gas will get bought, and people will travel less, but you're going to really eat into your consumption, and people will take away from their red meat consumption historically. So I like the fact that we're not going too high too fast in this meat market. I think the market's going to base here as we get into the later part of May, just because the supplies are going to start tightening up as we get into the late summer, and we've got that summer grilling season to look forward to. But we do have an erosion of meat in consumption going on in Asia right now that is going to be with us for quite some time, I think.
And can you put into perspective the supply side for meats, hogs, cattle, poultry, and then of ethanol usage as well?
Yeah, good question, because I think you got to find a leader, kind of like the wheat is my leader in the corn. I think the hogs are the leader in the cattle market here as we go into the summer grilling season, because they should be the ones that show the tightest supplies fastest. I had a really good conversation with a great client not far from that Mount Vernon, Alney area, raises a lot of birds, and it sounds like the HPAI is under control at this point, not hearing a lot of that in some key areas of the country anymore. And so I think the poultry supplies are probably now finally starting to bottom out. And pork is going to be very competitive this summer, I think, with beef and chicken. Pork should be the best thing out there, especially if we've got the China bulls out of the market. So I'd look for the low and the hogs first. Ethanol demand, it's probably not going to go anywhere but higher, given the high gas prices, and that's where your basis and your cash markets could diverge quite a bit from your futures if this weather really does stay great for corn planting in the short term.
Hey, thank you very much.
My pleasure, Todd. Great questions as always, sir.
That's Mike Suzalo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com. He did join Ellen Dearden of AgriView and Greg Johnson of TGM on our Commodity Week program. That's up online now at willag.org. You can stay with us. You'll hear the whole of that program on our home station today, and many of these radio stations will carry it over the weekend. Well, this week, the folks at Kansas State and here at the University of Illinois both wrote about Prevent Plant for their websites. Ag Manager at Kansas State, Farm Doc Daily here at the University of Illinois, as it relates especially to soybeans and how valuable that Prevent Plant might be going forward through this particular year. In the case of the U of I, it was on the idea whether this policy needed to be reconsidered in some form. However, The marketplace will look at it and think, wait a second, will there be more prevent plant soybean acres or not? I called Frayne Olson at North Dakota State University to check in and see what farmers in his part of the world really thought about prevent plant, especially as it relates to soybeans.
Well, when you do the math, given today's given the price selections that are available for prevent plant, again, depends upon whether you're doing yield coverage or revenue coverage, but most folks up here take the revenue coverage. When you do the math on prevent plant and you do the input cost you'd have associated with that, you know, that actually pencils out pretty well. If you look just at this year's information, if you just look at today's production cost versus the revenue that you generate from prevent plant. The thing that we found up here, because we do have and historically have had prevented planting. Again, as I mentioned, we're in that prairie pothole region. So if we have some wet springs, we always end up with some of that. What we have learned, though, is especially in those very wet springs, if you do a large amount of prevent plant, there is some yield drag that lasts at least for 1 year and sometimes for 2 years if you don't manage that water profile very well. Farmers have gone to a lot of cover crops to try and soak up some of that additional moisture to try and keep some of the soil tilth, the soil health issues. But what we have found is that when you do prevent planting year one, year two, you typically have some kind of yield drag. It varies a little bit by crop, but it is something that farmers will have learned and paying attention to. So there's, again, a bit more of a hesitancy in today's world than there was a few years ago. I was saying, well, if the math works, let's just do PP. In today's world, we're saying, you know, given the high prices and the potential problems we might have in the next year to 2 years to bring that production back in, the math and some of the equations have changed a little bit. So I think for some farmers, they're a little more hesitant to do a lot of prevent plant on their farms.
That's Frayne Olson. He's an agricultural economist at North Dakota State University Extension. We'll hear more from him on Monday during the closing market report. Be sure to tune in at that time. By the way, if you want to check out some of the prevent plant numbers, you can do that in the tools section at the FarmDoc website. I'm sure Kansas State's Ag Manager has a site for it. And there's an Excel spreadsheet that also comes from NDSU to calculate the prevent plant in that state. Up next, the war in Ukraine and a global food crisis. You know, the food crisis fears are intensifying as the war in Ukraine continues to wreak destruction on ports, rail transportation, and farms across that nation.
What we're really seeing happen, though, in the world stage right now is a true food disaster in the making.
That's Missouri Senator Roy Blunt. He points out Russia's blockade of Ukraine's ports are hampering some 4.5 million tons of grain from being loaded.
Nothing's coming out of the port at Odessa. Nothing's coming out of the port at Mariupol and hasn't since the Russian invasion began. This has huge impact on the whole world, but particularly on Africa. What's in the silos in Ukraine right now is not getting out, and Ukrainian farmers aren't getting crops planted for this year.
25% of world wheat, 20% of world corn, and 90% of sunflower oil come out of Ukraine and Russia, says the American Farm Bureau Federation Senior Director of Congressional Relations, Dave Samuelson.
There's mines, there's internal disruptions in Ukraine to their internal transportation network, of course. Their trains are trying to move some product, but they're also full of moving other goods and people.
And Senator Blunt says it's not just about inflation.
But the real issue here at this moment may not be nearly as much price as is real hunger. Some occurring today, a lot more could occur just a few months from today.
And while increased commodity prices are helping U.S. growers, AFBF Samuelson argues soaring fuel and fertilizer costs made worse by the war in Ukraine are eating into those prices. By the way, the United Nations World Food Program says at least 47 million people in 81 countries could be driven to the edge of famine because of the war in Ukraine. Climate change shocks across the planet and, of course, COVID-19, along with the soaring cost of food and fuel. Let's check the weather forecast on this Friday with Eric Snodgrass. He's from Nutrien Ag Solutions and AgriPol. Hi, Eric. Good Friday to you.
Yeah. You doing well?
I am doing well. After traveling, I was in Florida the week before, Wisconsin earlier this week. I'll tell you what I've not seen, though, in all my travels is very much in the way of planting, I have to admit. And I suppose that's because of so much rainfall over the last 10 days. Can you tell me where that came and who had it and who didn't?
Yeah, in addition to that, it's been cold, right? So we've had too much water coming from the sky and then too much cold everywhere else. And it's all been coming from what had been a very active Pacific jet. In other words, it was straight out of the west, slammed into the northwest part of the United States, and then came right across us. And so we just kept getting system after system out of system. And the end of this week has been quite miserable around here because of that. So let's talk about who got the rain and who didn't. Well, there was quite a bit of severe weather to the south, but the south has been able to get more planting done than much of the Midwest. And in the Midwest, while we've had quite a bit of rainfall, it's more about the frequency than anything else. But I think the most important story has been from the northern plains to the southern plains, we've beat back the drought. Unfortunately, that's been done to the tune of flooding across much of North Dakota, the Red River Valley of the North, and then, as we just saw here in the last few days, a tremendous amount of flooding down in parts of Oklahoma. So this often happens, right? When you have a drought, the way you bust it is with severe weather and flooding. I've never seen a drought break on just gentle rains over like a 15-day time period. It came through and just really knocked out, especially Nebraska, just got a ton of precipitation. So we're still going to play the waiting game to get things going, but at least we got rid of what was a major concern early about the extensiveness of that drought through spring.
All right. So the next 10 days are really important because while we're not all that far behind, relatively speaking, we're lagging, but we need to catch up. And really, these next 10 days are important for producers.
Yeah, and I'm sure most people know by now, but we've been calling for some pretty serious heat to return to the midsection of the United States. In fact, this morning, as my wife was running out the door with the kids, taking them to school, she's like, do we have spring anymore? Or does it just go straight to summer? And that's because we're going to be seeing temperatures in the 80s, almost cracking 90 here in central Illinois next week. So something to think about here. So it will be drier. We're going to plant this crop fast. We're going to go from way behind to trying to play catch up, which means this whole crop here in the midsection of the country, if it goes in inside of a 10-day window, it's all going to go through the same crop stages at the same time, right? It'll all be vulnerable at the same time. And therefore, we're going to have to just keep very close tabs on this performance. Now, in the northern plains, this is not the case. Still too cold and a whole lot more precipitation coming in that way, which means those places up there in the Dakotas, into the Canadian Prairie, they're not going to be moving anything as it's going to be quite wet in that area.
What do you see for the summer months?
Yeah, just got some brand new data in here, and this is really kind of important. So I just mentioned we've done a lot to bust the drought back up, right? Issue is that the main driving factors that give us drought risk for the summer haven't gone anywhere. Okay, so La Nina is loosening its grip a bit, right? It's no longer the most dominant thing plowing across the Pacific, but it's still there, which means that until we start to see some major shifts around, we're going to continue to be talking about drought risk on this upcoming summer. So just went through a really wet time period. We're going to open things up to plant, but I have not yet seen any long-term indications that suggest that we've got a summer that's not going to continue to pose some form of drought risk from the Midwest to the plains. And therefore, I'm still concerned about that.
Turn your attention to the second crop, or safrinha corn, in South America.
Well, we finally got in some better data that gives us an idea on what happened to that crop over the last couple of months. You know, here in the States, we can keep track on precip with high precision and really tight time intervals. In South America, I've got to rely on other methods. And basically what we've seen is that the safrinha crop did not really get a ton of extra rain during pollination and grain fill. So what happened here is that part of the crop initially started off dry. It spread west. Over toward Mato Grosso. And we're now getting reports that, you know, maybe 60 to 70% of that crop saw well below average precipitation. So we're anticipating the size of that crop to shrink a little bit, or at least not expand as we go forward, which again, this is impactful because A lot of folks were counting on a big crop down there to help the global balance sheet. So all eyes are going to turn to the United States and what we can do here going forward. And I think that's going to be critical to see how these markets move over the next, 4 to 6 months.
And on that vein, we'll check in with you each and every week to try to keep tabs on what conditions have been like and what to expect as we go through the growing season. Thank you for doing that for us.
Yeah, you bet.
Eric Snodgrass is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible and joined us on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Up next is our Commodity Week program recorded yesterday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Ellen Dearden of Ag Review. She's in Morton, Illinois. Greg Johnson joins us from TGM, TotalGrainMarketing.com out of Champaign, Illinois. And Mike Zuzulo is here from GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online, listen to us on demand whenever you'd like at WILLAG.org. Sometimes I like to get a list of things that maybe we should discuss for the day to see what you all are thinking about. Ellen Dearden from AgReview, I think I'll start with you. What's on your list today?
Well, I'm curious whether the market already has dialed in the weather delays that we've just seen for planting and whether this pattern change that looks to be coming up is going to be a market mover.
Greg Johnson from Total Grain Marketing.
Well, I think we've talked about Ukraine for a while, but I don't think we can talk about it enough. They are a big producer of corn, and the estimates as to how much of their acreage they are going to get planted and how much of that will translate into actual production and how much of that will translate into actual exports, I think is something worth talking about.
And Mike Zuzulo on your list.
Now, the only thing I can think of, Todd, is the COVID lockdowns in China seem to be really having some demand destruction effects, and probably worth talking about to the listeners out there and whether this is going to impact us more severely than maybe we had thought as we head into the middle part of the year.
Let's start out with the weather delays just a bit and get an idea of how far along everybody thinks farmers are in their regional areas. We'll start with you, Ellen Dearden, in the Peoria area along the Illinois River. How far along are folks?
Oh, anywhere from zero to half the soybeans are planted and very little corn.
Greg Johnson in East Central Illinois?
Same thing, 0 to 50%, but I'd say on average probably 20% of the beans and 15% of the corn. More beans than corn. Maybe that's surprising a little bit, but I guess maybe I shouldn't be surprised by that. But more beans than corn, probably 20% beans, 15% corn.
Greg Johnson is with TGM, Total Grain Marketing, from right here in Champaign County, Illinois. Joined us on our Commodity Week program, along with Ellen Dearden of AgReview out of Morton, Illinois, and Mike Zuzula, GlobalCommResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. You can hear the whole of that program right now up online if you'd like. Play it on demand at willag.org, WILLAG.org, or wait until the weekend. Many of these radio stations will carry the program as well. If you happen to have Alexa or Google in your house, you can just ask either of them to play Commodity Week, and it's pretty likely that both of them will just manage to find the podcast as long as you say podcast after Commodity Week. Say, hey, play the Commodity Week podcast, and it should pop up. Hey, thank you so much for listening to us. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.